On June 27th, the Supreme Court issued a 5-4 decision on a case called Janus versus American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Council 31. Yes, it's mouthful, but the gist of our highest court's ruling is that public sector unions can no longer automatically collect fees from government workers who choose not to join the union. Here to speak with me about this decision, which overturned a 41-year-old precedent, is Stephen Moore. He's an economist at the Heritage Foundation. He was an economic advisor on the Trump campaign. He's written extensively for the Wall Street Journal and other major outlets. And he's founder of the Club for Growth. Stephen Moore, thank you for making the time.
A pleasure to be with you.
So, right out the chute here, what do you make of the Supreme Court's decision in the Janus case?
Well, I really view this, I think a lot of the press coverage of this has been a little bit alarmist and off topic, because I think the real issue here for me is kind of a free market libertarian, is that this is really about the right of association. And, you know, this is obviously a First Amendment right, you know, not just right to free speech, but right of assembly and right of association. And the right of association means not only do you have the right to associate with a group, but you also have a fundamental constitutional right as American not to associate with a group that you don't want to associate with. And what was happening in so many of these forced union states was that workers were forced to join the union against their will. Now, look, I am not anti-union. You know, unions have an important place in America, and especially in our history. But I am against a union forcing someone to join, and that's what is no longer going to be allowed.
Well, in effect, they had to make compulsory political contributions.
Well, that's the other point, is that, and this was the kind of point that the court made, which is, wait a minute, you know, if you're forcing someone to join the union, and then you're forcing them to provide money for political ads for candidates they don't support, that's forced speech. I mean, that's clearly, you know, I think that the court was right, but that's a clearly unconstitutional thing. I mean, not every single Democrat, not every single union member in a state like Washington or California or my home state of Illinois is a liberal Democrat, and yet virtually all of the money that the unions spend goes to help Democratic candidates, and that just isn't fair to be able to have your money taken to espouse political views that you don't agree with.
So Democrat politicians have been collectively shouting, in essence, that the sky is falling, and speaking to their constituents in sort of this spirit of foreboding over the future of unions. Do they have a point? Do the implications of this court decision pose a fundamental threat to the longevity of public sector unions?
Well, that's a good question, because we don't know, right? We'll see what happens now. Basically, public sector employees will have the right to join the union or not to join the union. And I was looking at some of the data from other states where this has already happened. So two in particular, where in the last 5 or 6 years, public employee unions were no longer able to, compel workers to join the union, and that was Michigan and Wisconsin. And I looked 5 years later what happened to the union membership, for the teachers unions and the policemen union and the firefighters union. And what the general gist of what happened was about 30%, maybe a little less than one out of three employees dropped out of paying the union dues. So will this hurt the union? Yes. And it will mean they're going to not be able to do as much political activity, but the unions will still live on. And I would argue they're going to have to show the workers that they're providing them real benefits for the money that they take out of their paycheck.
You mentioned earlier, and I was glad to hear you say it, that you're not in favor of abolishing unions across the board. But what do you think could help them function more appropriately? You alluded to the fact that they do serve a purpose. So how could they be tweaked? How could they be changed to serve a real positive purpose and not just a partisan left-wing purpose?
Well, that's a good question. I think the union's really been hurt by their left-wing drift, and it's clearly been a left-wing drift. I mean, I'll give you an example that, you know, virtually all of the unions were against Trump in the election and spent a lot of money try to defeat Trump. But we know from the, you know, exit polling and other data that about almost 40% of union households voted for Trump. So there's a perfect example where the union leadership was completely out of step with that big chunk of the union members. We'll see. I think that what the unions are going to have to do is really concentrate on what the union is supposed to do, collectively bargain, provide their workers with good contracts that the workers want, and do less political activity, because that's really not central of what unions are in business to do.
Speaking with economic policy analyst Stephen Moore. Stephen, taking a step back and looking more broadly right now at the fundamentals of the economy, what do you make of it? Is this escalating so-called trade war panning out right now?
Well, the economy is really healthy. You know, it's as healthy as it's been probably in 20 years. So that's the good news. I think everybody feels it. And you can see it in the polling where, you know, 2 out of 3 Americans say the economy is good or great now. And that's, you know, up from 1 in 3 before the election. So, you know, we've clearly moved into a much higher gear. We've got 6 million more jobs than we have people that can fill them around the country. And I mean, Seattle's one of those places where the economy, at least the last time I was there a few months ago, was really booming. And so it's a very healthy economy. The trade war is holding back on growth, no question about it. This is I've always said this is a risky game Trump is playing. I think he has a point, by the way. I think we don't have a level playing field when it comes to the trade situation. Most of these European and Asian countries impose a lot higher tariffs on our goods than we impose on theirs. And what Trump has always said is, I want a fair trade. I want a level playing field. I want reciprocity. When we reduce our tariffs, we want, you know, Japan and Germany to lower theirs as well. Whether he wins here, we'll see. I mean, I have a hunch that this is all going to turn out okay, and some of these countries are going to agree to lower their tariffs. But you know, it's going to be rough sledding for a number of months now. And we saw what happened with Harley Davidson saying, well, they're going to move a plant out of the United States to Asia. You know, that's the opposite of what Donald Trump wants to see.
I agree with you that right now America in many ways is at a disadvantage when it comes to trade. Trump has chosen one strategy, one path forward, which seems to be, I'm going to punch you back. Then if you punch me harder, I'm going to punch you harder. I mean, I'm not really sure what the end game is there. What do you think would be a better strategy to level the playing field?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, I love the idea that he put out in the final days of the, the final hours of the G7 meeting in Canada, which was all of the European and the Canadians and, you know, the Japanese, and he basically said, okay, let's just go to zero tariffs. Let's every country cut their tariffs right to zero. And, you know, that took the Europeans and Japanese by surprise, and they didn't like that idea too much, which shows that they're a little hypocritical when they accuse Trump of wanting higher tariffs, and when he said, let's have no tariffs, they walked away from the table on that. So I think Trump should press that point, that what we would like to see ultimately is true free trade, where the tariffs go away everywhere. And then, by the way, if he did that, I think he would seize the moral high ground in the debate, which I'm not so sure he has right now. The second mistake I think Trump made, and I'm a big, you know, I worked for Donald Trump. I was one of his senior economic advisors, so I'm a great admirer of his policies. But I think he made a mistake in that, as I see it, the big bad actor on the international global scene today is China. China mm-hmm. is legitimate. Trump is very right to pick a fight with China, because China's not playing by the rules. They're cheating. They're stealing. They're building up their military. They've become a real national security and national economic threat to the United States. And we ought to really focus our attention on China and not agitate all of our other allies at a time when, you know, we have to go toe-to-toe with Beijing.
Stephen Moore, thank you so much for your valuable insights and analysis. He's an economist at the Heritage Foundation. He's written extensively for the Wall Street Journal. You can follow him on Twitter at Stephen Moore. That's Stephen with a PH. Thank you so much for the time. It was an honor, and I really appreciate it.
Have a great weekend. Thanks very much.
I'm Greg Tomlin, sitting in for Dori Monson today. Lots more coming up. Stick around.